Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about leadership assumptions, the assumptions that we make when we do, well, when we do a negotiation, when we do a consensus building, when we do an alternative dispute resolution. We make some assumptions, especially before we get there, but even as we sit there. And we have to think about that and think about how that is impacting our successful outcome. So let's talk about it specifically. Yeah, I know we all do, but let's talk about it specifically and figure out, well, what we're doing, maybe unconsciously, and what we could do better, because we are, of course, a practical show, and so we like to know how to do things. So, oh, thank you. There's a whole bunch of folk already answering the question. Thank you so much for being here and for your participation. So, you do know the question I'm going to ask. It's the general one that we generally talk about. It's what type, each time we have a different question, of course, but it has to do with the topic. So, what types of assumptions do we as leaders make? Yeah, what should we talk about? What type of assumptions do we as leaders make? You know what? We've got quite a few ideas here. Let's start with what we assume about the group generally and then work our way down to more specific. How about an assumption about the level of confrontation that we're going to have, right? That we think about before we even start and as we're going along, right? We make an assumption, an idea of the level of confrontation we're going to be dealing with. Okay, let's call level of hostility, that is even one step up. Let's make that a separate topic. The level of hostility that this group is going to have, right? So that we can get an idea of what it is we're going to be dealing with. So we make some assumptions, maybe even based on prior experience with these people or this type of group, right? Yeah, we make some assumptions. How about an assumption about the level of expertise? Both the expertise of our participants and the expertise that we're going to need to bring to the table in order to make a successful outcome, resolve things. I suppose this is true too. Let's talk about an assumption of our own superiority. Hey, we're the leader. Maybe we are the most important. Maybe we are the superior, right? An assumption about our own place in this. Let's think about that too. Because it will lead us to a certain type of leadership that might or might not be appropriate. And so let's talk about leadership style after we talk about thinking about our own superiority. Let's talk about leadership style because that will be impacted. A lot of people are talking about making a cultural assumption. Also ethnic, a religious group type thing from birth, but also corporate, which is very, very pervasive sometimes. And interesting, and you must understand it, right? So let's make a cultural assumption. Second point, too, we make an assumption as to whether or not our participants are well-intentioned, right? An assumption as to whether or not our participants are sincere. but they're well-intentioned. They're really there for the purpose they say they are. Yes, other side of the coin, or the same side of the coin maybe, that our employer is well-intentioned and sincere when they bring us in. I'm going to use employer like I always do in a very generic manner, the word employer, to be the person, group, organization, individual, whatever, that brought us in to lead this. I'm going to call them our employer. It may not at all be what our relationship is exactly, but it indicates that they're the people that brought us in, right? So that our employer, whoever brought us in, is well-intentioned and sincere. We make an assumption about that. How about an assumption about media coverage, which is our next one up? There's assumption concerning whether it's fair and impartial or it's hostile, yeah? And it depends kind of on which media coverage, if it's a hotly contested issues, because, well, you know, it depends what their viewpoint is and what they perceive the viewpoint of their readers is, or their listeners, or their viewers. So let's talk about assigning a spokesperson, somebody that represents us, instead of having everybody give kind of conflicting statements. Even though they don't think they're conflicting, they come out that way. And remember that anything that is said comes out differently in print because it doesn't have the same inflection, which is why you should never use sarcasm. Never use sarcasm and never use humor either, because it will not come out well in print. So let's go through these. Let's think about them. So what type of assumptions, our first assumption when we're first looking at this, first thinking about it, how about the confrontation level of our participants, of our group? This is an interesting point. Muhammad says that a lot of leaders refuse to acknowledge confrontation. They refuse to acknowledge it. They put on blinders and they say, well, that's nothing. It needs to be addressed. Yeah, Muhammad is right. That a lot of times I do see that, especially with somewhat inexperienced leaders, where they kind of refuse to acknowledge that there's a problem, which is a problem in and of itself. Yeah, right. Because you have to face that head on. You have to think about the group dynamic. Because if you don't, you will not have a decent group dynamic. It just won't work. And yes, so let's think about the confrontation level. Let's not make an assumption. Well, people are saying that you can make an assumption and then get proven wrong that the confrontation level is going to be high. Depends what your assumption is based on. If it's really based on facts or based on prior experience, or based on prior relationships between the parties, maybe that is a valid point, right? Yes, let's confront that. Let's face it straight, really head on, right? Now, what should we do? Well, yes, thank you, yay! A whole bunch of folk are talking about the civility rules, which are the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now really has. And at their very core, because we do have some new people, thank you everyone for being here. Pardon me. At their very core, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. We'll not be rude to one another. We will take turns. We will allow everybody to speak. We will not sigh, roll our eyes, get rude in any way, right? Yeah. The civility rules are very important to announce, even if you have judged as an assumption because of prior knowledge even, that this group is not particularly confrontational with each other. Civility rules also apply to our dealings with the outside world too, right? Yeah, maybe they're going to be confrontational to an oppositional group. No matter. We want to announce the civility rules, then we will act in a civil manner towards each other and not be rude in any way, and towards pretty much everyone we deal with, this is true, and we need to enforce them immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. By the time things get rude and kind of out of hand, it is too late to say, remember that we have some civility rules, we're going to enforce them now. No, you can't, it's too late once things have gone completely uncivil. We want to have those rules be in place before incivility happens, right? Yeah. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. The consistently gets a little wearying sometimes, but we need to do it. And sometimes you've got someone who is violating the civility rules. They're either doing it deliberately, and we need to figure out what to do about that. Sometimes people have confrontational personalities, or they just sound like that. You know people like that, don't you? Yes. There are some people in this world who always seem like they're fighting, right? It's their way. And you want to take them aside, first of all, and explain, not now, not here, no. Then you might need to bring in an employer, right? You might need to apply some peer pressure. Because the sentence, well, he's just a nasty piece of work, is not going to fly. Because it makes for a bad group dynamic. You can't have someone being disruptive. You might have to dismiss them. They might have to no longer be in the group, right? Mm-hmm. Or kind of ostracized, right? Yes. If they people are asking what happens if they insist on engaging in confrontation. This is what we're going to talk about in our next topic, which is hostility. The hostility level is high if somebody refuses to stop being confrontational, right? And it makes people uncomfortable, and it ruins our civility rules, and it ruins our group dynamic, and we're going to need to stop it, right? Before we are engaged to be the person straightening things out with this group, right? My specialty somewhat, if I have one, is I come in and help with groups that have already, I don't like to use the word failed, let's just say not succeeded. In order to do that, in order to come into any group, right, you need to understand what your power is to enforce the civility rules before you get there, before things go funny, right? Yeah. You want to be able to say, what is it that I can do to make you be civil, right? Because you might have people that it's not their tendency to want to. Sometimes you have a wonderful group and they're all just trying to do some good in the world. But a lot of times you've got different personalities and maybe they even have prior history. That's nothing to do with this group. But they are not prone to be civil to each other. Yes, sometimes romantic entanglement or disentanglement will do that. Mm-hmm. So I want to know before I come in, I want the employer to put down in writing what I can do to enforce the civility rules, what the penalty is for violation, right? An employment penalty, yes, mm-hmm. Am I giving a grade in some way, a report that really has teeth? Will the employer come and back me? Can I get a higher up to come and enforce the rules, right? Yes. These rules are particularly, yes, thank you. George and others are saying that it's particularly important if you've come into a group that has already not succeeded, and the prior leader, the one who didn't succeed, is now a participant or in some way acting concerning the group. And he or she, let's face it, this is just human nature, he or she would prefer that the group fail, that you not come in and say, I'm the new sheriff in town, and actually have a successful outcome when they did not. They want to be able to say nobody could get that resolved. Nobody could get it straightened out, right? Yeah, so it's in their personal reputation interest to not be very cooperative. We need to know what we can do about that. Can they be dismissed, right? Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too. People are talking about empathy, right? Yes. Suki says to determine the cause of the hostility and the confrontational attitude. Let's determine the cause. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Mm-hmm. In order to understand, yes, thank you. Yes, Hussein and others are saying that you have to ask the 5W questions. Thank you. Means you guys have been listening. Yes. We talk about this, well, some frequency. Prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, right? Yes. And the 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Very important, because they will get to the bottom of why we're having this difficulty. What's happening? Let's determine the cause of it. Who, what, where, when, and why. Do we ask them all in that order? No. Do we ask all of them at the same time? Not necessarily. Do we ask them in front of other people? Depends. That's a leadership judgment call. You might want to find these things out privately and then move to maybe some peer pressure, employer pressure, and like that, right? Mm-hmm. But you're trying to get understanding. You want to know the cause of this kind of bad behavior, right? That you don't feel cooperative and you feel kind of hostile. Let's find out why. Mm-hmm. Yes. Who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? And why do you think that? Why did you draw that conclusion? Now, are those the only questions? Nope. The idea of let's get down to the bottom of what it is that's causing this. Why you have that opinion? Why we are wrestling with this? And what we're going to do about it, right? Yeah. What can we do about it? How can we reach agreement? How can we make consensus? How can we all go towards the middle, right? And not just insist on a position that's kind of, well, not going to get us very far towards successful outcome, right? Yes. So let's find out and let's discuss it and let's find out what it is that can be done, because what's causing it is the key. Our next topic was going to be expertise. Whose expertise? Mm-hmm. Yeah, whose? Well, if it's our expertise, then we know how far we can go before we have to call in an expert. Yes, thank you. Lee says that expertise is often exaggerated. Yes, make sure that you're not doing it about your own expertise, come to think of it. But expertise is often exaggerated. Oh, I know how to do that. That's nothing. That's a piece of cake. We can get that done. Well, let's see if that's really true. Tell me how, right? Yeah. We might break out the 5W questions about expertise and find out, well, kind of how recent maybe, right? Because sometimes people use an expert, and I've seen this, who they've used for years, and they're wonderful people, and they're intelligent people. But the circumstances have changed on them, which means that knowledge that they had before, maybe not so much now, right? Yeah, maybe not so much importance now. Maybe not the whole story, not the whole picture, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, Erin and others are saying that you need to have confidence in your leadership expertise. Well, that's something different. That's your ability to get people together, to create a strong group dynamic. That is not specific expertise to these issues. It is specific expertise to getting people to get along, which is very, very important and possibly the most important expertise of all. But we also need someone to understand these issues and be able to tell us if we're on the right path. A lot of times there's technology and things involved or medical, and we need someone to say, yes, I think that's right. And maybe we could have more than one expert with different viewpoints and have them explain to us how come we've got that difference of opinion. How come that's what you think? Yeah? Right? Yes. Interesting point. Padmaya says that sometimes you should actually research your expert's credentials. Have them prove to you that they're still up to date. Have them prove to you that they really know something. Have them make references, for example, about their reputation if you're not certain. Let's get a recommendation from someone we trust and has been in this area for a while, and maybe they could recommend an expert to us. Yes, it's good to have kind of a network for these things. And if you're kind of new and you don't have the network, well, connect with someone who does so that they can give you some advice as to who would really know that. Mm-hmm. Yes. The next one that was up on our list, excuse me, I'm going to take just a really like a 6-second break. I know this is really tasteless, but I have to blow my nose. I've got allergies today. Hang on a second. Oh. Pardon me. I could feel my voice was kind of going. Yes, it's summer in this part of the world, and you can actually see the air. Stuff is floating. Yes. Which is nice, but it's quite humid. Stuff is floating. Okay. So we're going to look for our experts' credentials. Have them show us why they're a really relevant expert, right? Sometimes, if you ask for a recommendation, the person you ask doesn't quite understand what you're looking for, what you need, and so they send you an expert that's a little sideways, right? And maybe you can ask that expert to recommend someone more, yeah, people are saying more relevant. I suppose that's true. Someone more with greater expertise in the specific thing that you need. Because sometimes it is quite specific, right? Because we've got general expertise amongst our group, but we might need some sort of real specific advice, specific opinion, right? And I do like to get all sides. I think it's very, very important so that we don't have an unexpected consequence. Whoops, that kind. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about superiority, because sometimes it's not our superiority, it's the expert's superiority that might be unwarranted, right? Yeah, it's been my personal experience, and this is one of my assumptions, because we all have them, right? I make a judgment which is really what an assumption is, it's a preconceived one, but a judgment that if you are arrogant and think you're superior, that you're not. You're covering over incompetence. That is my preconceived notion. That is my assumption. Sometimes I am wrong, and people are arrogant because they're pretty much the only one to go to. And therefore, they can be superior because, well, in this specific instance, for these specific issues, they kind of are the superior choice. Yeah, I know it's always annoying when that happens. But it is arrogance to really hold it over people and keep announcing it. Yes. Yes, I do see that sometimes. Yes. Lee and others are saying that sometimes you deal with experts, especially, who keep telling you about their credentials. I graduated from Harvard, that kind of a thing. Oftentimes, that's not a real good sign. Isn't that awful? But it really kind of isn't. It means that they're going to be difficult to work with because they're hiding behind a list of credentials. I suppose it is my preconceived notion, and we know this because we talk about it, and my assumption and my maybe arrogance to be less concerned about credentials, as in where did you go to school, and more concerned about what your actual practical experience in this area. Because a lot of times, it's very interesting to talk with the people who tried to get to our result but might not have gotten it. Or maybe they did get it and we want to know how. Either way, we want to know what happened. We want to know what happened if they didn't quite make it so that we don't duplicate the mistakes. And we for sure want to know what happened if they were successful, so that we can duplicate it, so that we can apply it to our situation, so that we could say, oh, look, this worked then. Let's see if it's still applicable. Yes. Yes, and for that, you need to be willing to listen, which is not a characteristic when somebody is arrogant and feels superior to everybody else, right? The willingness to listen, the willingness to accept advice, right? Yeah. The willingness to consider all sides. This is a good point, too, when we talk about leader superiority. Yes. Matthew says that you may be an expert in consensus building, but you're also a team member. You may be an expert in consensus building, but you're also a team member. How very well said. Yes, because you need to deal with these people. You need to get to everybody to reach consensus so we can go forward. We're team members, really. We're just kind of the head counselor. Like this is camp, right? Yeah, but we're team members, all of us. I suppose this is leadership style. People are saying that arrogance like that is leadership style. Let's talk about leadership style as our next topic. We all have a style that we've developed over the years, right? We have a preference, the way we run things. It's just naturally speaking, we're human beings, and we kind of prefer a certain style of leadership, right? The amount of in control, kind of authoritarian leadership, oftentimes depends on the client needs, on the employer needs, right? The client needs. Because each situation is different. Each group of participants is different. Even if they happen to be the same human beings, it's still a different groups, different issues, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very important to remember that in order to reach your successful outcome, you might need to modify your general style. And if you can't stretch, maybe you should recommend someone else's leader. I've done that. Sometimes you're not the right person. And you should fess up. You should let the employer know that, right? Not the right style, not the right person for this job. Yes. It needs a different kind of leadership style. Now, you can modify your leadership style to a certain extent. The more experience you have, I think, the more you can read the group, read the employer, read the corporate culture, right? Because it all depends on the client needs, on the group needs. Mm-hmm. And it is my general style, partially because I'm an American, somewhat I think because I'm a woman, and because I've been doing it a really long time and I'm good with people, it is my general style to be kind of outgoing and democratic. Let's all put in our opinions. Let's think about all of them. Let's compromise. Let's move forward, right? Yeah. Some group need more than that. They need a more decisive style. They want to be told what to do. Just tell me what to do, and I'll do it. Just tell me, right? Yeah, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. It's a matter of culture. It's a matter, sometimes I think it's a matter of generational. Different generations have different ideas about that. But I see a lot, not only ethnic culture, but corporate culture. There are kind of rules of engagement. And you're not supposed to deviate. And you're supposed to tell people how to handle that. Is it a good idea? People are asking. Should you push that kind of a leadership style? I'm going to say it depends, because it depends on the situation. It's faster, I'll give it that. It's easier, often, less time-consuming, less messy. But the problem is you need practical buy-in. You need people to be able to find a working solution and actually do it. They have to have buy-in. They have to have enthusiasm. They have to go, yeah, this is what we're doing, and we're doing it now. Fabulous. Yes, you need buy-in. You need people to really feel that they're part of the process and understand what it is that they're doing next. I find that understanding, because I deal with groups that get undone, that understanding is the most critical. Very, very important. Very important to understand what it is that I, as a participant, am supposed to be doing next. That's really what most people want to know, especially in the corporate world. What's my obligation? What's my part in this? What do I need to do to get this done, right? And you need somebody to keep track of that process, too, because sometimes people sincerely believe that they are working towards the successful objective, kind of turned around. They're not really doing something that's useful. And somebody needs to know before they get invested in it, before they insist on it, before they report it to the entire group and people go, huh? Yeah. So the lead, if that's the leader that keeps track because you don't have staff, then you need to be very efficient in your leadership style. I tend to be quite efficient because I've been doing it a long time, but I don't have to do the nitty-gritty day-to-day track how we're all doing, report into me stuff. I think it's important to have assistance with that. You're busy. You're busy doing the group dynamic. You're busy thinking about it. You're busy being the most prepared person in the room because you must be. When we start out and as we go forward sometimes, depending on how it's going, I ask the parties for a position paper. I want to know when they start out and as we go along too sometimes, what it is that they think we're doing, what it is that they would like the outcome to be, how they think it is that we should get to that outcome, right? These are all very important questions that we're going to ask ourselves, that we're going to ask of our participants, right? Because, and also, if you have to write it down on paper, and I do want it written down. I want it submitted, just like a high school teacher, right? I ask this of my employer, too, my client. What is it that you want? What does success look like, right? Why? We start with the 5W questions, right? If the position is, in my expert opinion as leader, not workable as stated, we're going to start with the 5W questions. We're going to find out why and what it is that we really want. Because it has to be workable. It has to be, in order to be a successful solution, you have to be able to successfully implement. If you can't, what good is it? Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that goes to our leadership style. And it goes to the fact that we're a leader. And you can be kind of didactic about it, more open. But you got to get to the bottom of these questions pretty much right away. Or we won't know where we're headed. And if we don't know what success looks like, we don't know what we're where we're headed, my leadership style is irrelevant because we won't know when we get there. We won't know that this is the first step. Let's celebrate, for example. We won't know that this is the final step. We won't know if this is a workable solution or not, right? Yeah, we'll be unsure. We have to define these things as we go along, and that's where the leader assists. Now, how much assistance, as in this is what we're going to do now, turn left, is up to judgment, right? But you can't make an assumption about what people want as their leadership style until you get there and read the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about cultural assumptions next because it goes to this. Mm-hmm. Remember, it's cultural. Corporations have cultures. You need to know about them, right? Mm-hmm. Really, they're in the rules, yes, but not always are the rules written down. That's a real good point. Corporations have regulations, like governments. Governments have regulations. Organizations have regulations. Doesn't need to be legally a corporation. But a group like that, a group that's together for a usually an economic reason, right? It's my job. They have rules. They have ways that it's always been done. If you need to breach one of those rules and make a new one, you should know that. You should know whether or not how it's always been done is a good idea or not. Because if it isn't, then that's something that we're going to have to deal with our employer also. We're going to have to change the culprit culture, right? Sometimes this is true of organizational cultures too, religious, ethnic, whatever. This is the way things have always been done. I like it. Beth and others are saying, then the answer is, how's that working out for you? Right? If this is the way that things have always been done and it's been tried, because believe me, if it's always been done, it's been tried, and it's not working, we're going to have to visit how things have always been done. Because sometimes, I don't know, 75 years is enough time, and circumstances have changed. It's particularly true nowadays with all the technology and stuff. Circumstances change kind of quickly. What you can do changes kind of quickly. And you need to understand that it's comfort zone, right? We've done whole shows on comfort zone. You want to find a different show like on comfort zone? Archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. It's people's comfort zone. And you're trying to violate it with your cultural assumptions and their cultural assumptions, and they're all kind of clashing. Because people don't like to let go of the known, especially corporate. Because if you're too adventurous, you're liable to get into trouble. And then you're liable to lose your job because you said it should be done this way and you were before your time. Right? Yeah. So people like the comfort zone. Especially folks that have been doing the same thing for quite a while, and they've maybe risen to a pretty high position doing it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we need to evaluate whether or not that's still a good idea, because it might not be. Let's evaluate whether or not that's a good idea now. Mm-hmm. In case it kind of isn't, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Under cultural assumptions, let's think about the invisible participants, right? Well, I suppose we always assume there are some. I kind of do. I confess this because I've never seen a group of issues that didn't have somebody in the background taking an interest, thinking about stuff, maybe even being kept in the loop. I don't like to say reported to because that seems to indicate an actual report in writing. Not necessarily. Can be kind of less formal than that. But someone who your actual participants really, really, really want the respect of. And therefore, they're kind of reporting back, how's it going? What's happening? And the invisible participant, the one who is respected but isn't actually named or in the room, is giving an opinion, is giving ideas, is giving a you go over there and tell them that type response. Well, yes, what should we do about that? First thing I like to do is I like to ask the 5W questions, right, to get understanding and empathy. And we find out that there are invisible participants. Let's invite them in. Right? Let's invite them. In order to do this frequently, the invisible participant is invisible in the background because they don't want to put their name forward. They wish to remain anonymous. How about we make them, we respect them and we honor them by making them anonymous experts, right? Now you know who they are. Yes, thank you, especially if they're being paid. But let's say that they're even not. But they've taken an interest and their advice is very, very interesting, might even be very good advice, might have expertise that this group does not have about some sort of unintended consequence that we're about to stumble into. Well, gee, we'd like to know that. But let's invite the invisible participants to the table, and you must keep their identity anonymous if that is what their wish is. Yes. People are asking why someone would want to be anonymous. Not because they're criminals. Far from it. Oftentimes, they are people who hold the position of influence and importance in the community, in the organization, in the old ways, so to speak. And they can see that things would be good to change, but they don't want to put their name forward in case this isn't the time. They don't want to have been known that they helped do something that was somewhat unpopular with their peers, with their superior, right? They're not too sure about it. They're not too sure about whether this is going to fly. And if it doesn't, they're going to have unpleasant repercussions. So they need to remain anonymous. And you must keep that. You must keep the anonymous. This is true, too. Sometimes people have a bias. And this is a good way of saying it. Thomas says it's historical versus reality. This is how it was done in the past. There, and it was successful. This is good. Do it now. That's historical. The reality is maybe, A, the analogy is no good because you're comparing apples to oranges. It's not the same situation. Or B, things have changed, and we need to be able to recognize that. So it's historical, which is always interesting and important, versus the present-day reality, which is also interesting and important, right? Yes. What other assumptions? Let's go on to the next assumption. Oops, we're going to run out of time. The next assumption that we talked about, and this goes to historical versus reality also, is that our participants are well-intentioned. Yes, that our participants are well-intentioned, that they're there because they really do want the stated successful outcome, that they're feeling enthusiastic, that they're going to work towards it, right? How are we going to know if they're not well-intentioned? Sometimes I see, for lack of a nicer word, corporate spies. They've come to find out what it is we're thinking so that they can improve upon it and bring it back to their own group, their own company, different company maybe. That's why we like to know stuff about each other and why we listen very carefully. Yes, thank you. Zoe and others are talking about body language. Now, we've done shows on this, archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Sometimes you can understand the attitude of a participant by looking at their body language, whether or not they're open, whether or not they are receptive, for one thing, to being enthusiastic about a successful outcome, right? Yes. Whether or not they have the idea of truthfulness, right? Making eye contact and other areas, right? Whether they're fidgeting, whether they're scowling or they look enthusiastic. This is all kind of interpretive, right, as a leader. Look to their reactions. Look to their choice of words, right? Yes. Every group doesn't need a level of enthusiasm. We have to feel that we're going to get there. Yes, and we as leaders must model that enthusiasm. We as leaders must model both civility. Remember, we talked about the civility rules. We cannot lose our temper, get rude, or do any of those bad things that we don't want our participants to do. we must model not only the civility rules, but enthusiasm. If we think as a leader that this is a really colossal waste of time, it will show. Yes, just like you know if your participants are well-intentioned or not, they know it about you too. If you've taken it just because it has a nice paycheck but you don't think we're going to get anywhere, don't take it because it'll ruin your reputation. You want to be able to be known in the community as someone who really gets somewhere, who really takes on a project and turns it around and makes it, well, makes it succeed, right? Yes, this happens too. I see this somewhat, well, kind of a lot, because you get kind of an area where people go, oh, call Sue. Sometimes, yes, no one others are saying that sometimes if the group has not been successful in the past or somebody's gotten some sort of a demotion, not exactly linked to the group, but it didn't help, right? They have a predisposition that they like the group to fail because then they don't seem like such a big failure. This is an assumption that I'm afraid that I make. It's an assumption that you're not that well-intentioned because you're going to be shown up by me. We have a little talk about that, and I decide whether or not the prior leader is going to be included in this group. Mm-hmm. If I cannot dismiss him or her, no. People are saying you make co-leadership. Not willingly. I find that that's truly hard to do, especially with someone who is less than well-intentioned and a stranger to you. You might be able to do co-leadership if it's in everybody's advantage, and really there's a real practical reason for it, a real success reason. And not just because you used to be leader and you want to retain the title. So I'm going to do all the work and you're going to do all the credit. I don't think so, right? Sometimes you can't dismiss the prior leader, but they need to be somewhat isolated as perhaps leader of a subcommittee, right? Give them some leadership power, but not over anything too important. Can I say that? Yes, that is a judgment call. I'm afraid it is an assumption on my part that if you really failed, oftentimes somewhat spectacularly, and I've been brought in as new sheriff, usually the feeling of the room is confrontational and hostile. Because they've already tried it. They did their best. It didn't work. And we will discuss that and work on that first. Right? We bring it out into the open. I'm big on that. Mm-hmm. Yes, the other thing you need to do if you're a participant and if you're employer, remember we're using the word employer loosely. If your participants are less than well-intentioned or they're hostile or they're feeling not real content with the world, you have the power to force cooperation, right? Because we've discussed that. And we need to have them complete their assignments and track it to make sure they're really completing the assignment that was given to them. Remember that any kind of assignment, any kind of instruction needs to be extremely clear. Not from my viewpoint, leader viewpoint, extremely clear from the viewpoint of the person getting the instruction. There is a theory that in order to make an instruction sink in, you have to say it three times in different ways. I think I subscribe to that theory. I didn't even know it was one, but I like to repeat instructions. I like people to tell me what it is that's their next step on a practical level. What are we going to do next? I want to know because then I know that they've understood what they're supposed to do, and then we keep track that they're really doing it. Right? Right. So you need to keep track. You need to keep track of your employer, too, because what if your employer is, well, you can assume they're well-intentioned, but what if they have an ulterior motive? Right? Maybe it's not failure, but it's a preference for a different outcome. What if that's the problem? What if they're not so well-intentioned and they have a real preference, a real idea, a real, this is what I'd secretly like to see happen? Sometimes it's economic, right? Yes. Richard and others are saying that that's where you need to define your success and what this success looks like and what your goals are before you begin the negotiation. You need to define it. I like it. Define it in writing. At least the preliminary goal and the preliminary what does success look like. Now, it's going to change, and everybody has to understand that, and that's in writing, too, that it's going to be modified along the way as we get into it and circumstances change and we find stuff out, right? Yes, thank you. Quite a few people are talking about level of commitment from the employer, too. How are we funded, for example? How much time have we been given? Who are our participants? And why? How have they been chosen? Is it haphazard? Is it a certain level of supervisor, for example? Yeah, let's see the level of commitment to find out how well-intentioned we are. If that level is lacking, you might need to run and not take on this project. It might be something that is needs to be brought into the open as to the intentions and the real crux of what's going on, right? I've seen some stuff that's underfunded and undervalued and under time committed, right? And the people that have been brought in, the people who have been assigned, are not the right people. They're not, for example, decision makers. They're a lower managerial level. Well, we're going to discuss why these things are. We're going to discuss them with the employer before we take this on. What is this? Why is this the case? And what are we going to do about it? Explain this. Let's break out the 5W questions, right? Right. Our last topic is media assumptions. We're going to run out of time. I apologize. We'll do the recipes next week. Hopefully. I know, but we've had such a lovely conversation. Media assumptions. I think we assume as leaders that the media is basically fair and impartial. I don't know that that's always true anymore. People have an agenda. There's an awful lot of media nowadays, right? And a lot of it is kind of personal agenda, personal opinions. And they report in a way that gives an impression that panders to that opinion and panders to their followers. I was going to say readers, but of course they're really followers nowadays, because I know newspapers still exist and magazines and stuff. But you've got the whole other undercurrent which influences the traditional of all kinds of media, right? And you have to be aware that different media outlets have different focuses, different ideas, different theories, and different types of people that they're appealing to so that they'll stay with them, right? Yeah. So it's kind of different marketing of their product, if I may call it marketing. Yes. And that is why, my friends, because we are running out of time, so we're just going to discuss this for a second. We're going to need a spokesperson. And not everybody in the group blogging and talking and Facebooking and 43 other things, especially while we're in the process. Let's get ourselves a spokesperson. Is it the leader? Is it us? Sometimes, but not necessarily. I don't crave media attention like that, because if you're not the right spokesperson, it's not going to be the right media attention, which means that things are going to go kind of sideways, and that's not good, right? Now, you might get signed on a position statement as a group or as an employer also, everybody's included. And then the spokesperson, now ordinarily I say that, in fact, it's one of Recipe for Peace Now's real ideas, that your experts, your best ones are people that have done it before, tried to do it before and didn't make it, and their actual credentials, not so much. I mean, nice, but they're not necessary. When you pick a media spokesperson, credentials do kind of make a difference, because they give some gravitas, they give some authority. And media, even the media that's kind of non-traditional, gets kind of impressed, right? So that might be a consideration. Yes. Mm-hmm. My friends, we are actually out of time. Thank you so much for being here. I apologize for not getting to the recipes, but look, we had a really good conversation, and we thought about our own assumptions, and that's the key to this. Think about what you're bringing with you when you do a negotiation. What is it that I think secretly, right? What are my biases about this? Because we all have some. And it is important to acknowledge that, to know that that's what's happening. Yeah. Thank you all for being here, for all of your participation. Yes, thank you. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on our website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.